This is the one with Elton, not John.
And Jackie's dirty pants.
An insinuated fellatio with a paving slab.
It's called Love and Monsters.
Here we go.
We're still on our endless voyage, all through time and all through space.
With Levine and Angels now, Daleks, Soilers, Amdun, wow.
Tennant, Smith and Eccleston, Gallifrey, where it all began.
Doctor Who is cool again, that was Russell's master plan.
Who back when? Reviewing all new Who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Rose and Donna, Amy Pond, Rory, Martha and beyond. Join us on this odyssey, what other choice could there be than who back when? Who back when?
Hello, ladies and gentlemen of Podcast Land, and welcome to episode N024 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Punkin, yes I am, and I am surrounded, I'm literally seated at a round table with a record amount of co-hosts.
Hello.
Shall we see if we can harmonise?
Oh, yes, that's right. It.
Hello.
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 To my right is
Nicolini. How you doing, Podcast Land?
To Nick's right is welcome to the show.
Hey, Mirimu.
Hello, Mirimu. To Mirimu's right is
hi. I'm on Drew's left. I'm Rory, and I'm here because of baby vomit.
That's a true story.
And to the Rollmeister's right is.
That's Who Back When. Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
Holy crap. This is an exciting moment for me because...
I'm so excited about this.
I'm super excited for this. We are reviewing Love and Monsters, which is very possibly the one of the most hated and slated episodes.
Can we at least say divisive? Let's not say hated and slated.
No, no.
Not all of us hate it.
No, seriously. Divisive. Didn't do the homework and I didn't look this up. But in I think it was the Eccleston retrospective, JD had pulled up like this incredible database of viewer ratings of every Doctor Who serial since the very beginning in 1963. Mm. And this one was, if not the lowest rated one, it was among the lowest rated ones.
Well, in the same way
people
that,
hate this
in
one.
The same way that Vincent van Gogh work was vilified before he, you know, yeah, absolutely, before he passed. I feel like this is a similar thing. You're all fucking wrong, basically.
Fine.
We'll get into it.
Fine.
I'm going to firmly play devil's advocate. This is the best episode I've ever seen, and I dare you guys to prove me wrong.
He can say that because he hasn't seen it.
That's right. It's a fairly polarised round table. We have Rory, who's never seen this episode. We have Nick, who absolutely loves the shit out of it.
Okay.
We have Drew, who...
Yeah, well,
like
I'm probably boringly in the middle, aren't I?
Okay, that's you've got a wobbly thumb.
I'm a centrist.
At some point, you're going to have to love something, do you mean?
You need to find something in life.
Fucking believe in something, man.
And then we have Mirimu and I, who re-watched this moments before you guys came around to Punkin Enterprises studio.
What do we think about it?
It's really not a good episode, but it's nowhere near as bad as I remembered it being.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okie dokie. Shall we jump into a B-scale?
Let's.
Elton, Ursula, and a few other people we don't really care about form Linda, London's investigative detective agency.
A group devoted to uncovering the mystery of the Doctor.
Along the way, they find friendship and love, and for once, begin to enjoy life.
And they're suddenly taken over by the mysterious Victor Kennedy. However, they up their game.
And now it becomes Elton's task to
infiltrate
the life of Jackie Tyler.
B-Scout over, you are welcome.
Aren't you just?
Scene 1. Cold open to someone running up a big pile of stones. First you see his feet, then his face, then his feet again in the exact same way. Then his face! And then he stops running and is walking very slowly.
I'm thoroughly enchanted already. Mm. That's,
so far I'm enjoying this episode.
It's quite something. It's dynamic and there are feet and faces and all of both of those things. And
I need to see your hands right now.
The table is suspiciously slanting. But that might just be the table. Okay, yes. And then he stops after a tremendous amount of exertion and immediately gets all his breath back.
This is going to be a very, very long episode.
Yes, yes. Presumably he was running from something, but then he just sort of slows to a crawl. And then he hears the voices of the Doctor and Rose coming from a nearby building.
Actually, he finds the TARDIS first.
Oh, yeah, he does. As a place of sanctuary. As a, you know, he's running from stuff's happening, crazy people, Doctor, basically blowing all their budget on one CGI monster. Credits.
It's not CGI though.
Is it not?
It's an actual costume, and the guy is credited. Yeah, the guy's credited and everything.
I look CGI shit. Is it just the background is CGI or something?
Oh, maybe the background. I think they put like a light.
Yeah, but it just looks terrible.
Were you watching it on a small screen?
Maybe. It looks awful to me. Anyway.
Anyway, no, it is definitely a costume. And I feel like maybe it's just very similar, but I feel like they reused that same monster in Torchwood, in the spin-off.
Very possibly. I assume that they bust their entire budget on that one scene and then just had to like sort everything with a handy cam and those like three fucking actors. But okay, fair enough. I'll take that as a point. Yeah. But either way,
well, regardless, so
we're deep into the intro scene, which upsets you no end because it's not synced up.
Wait, hang on, before we get into that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he sees the monster, then Rose and the Doctor turn up. And then we cut to the actual reveal of, like, the narrative arc of this episode, which is that the guy running, Elton, is actually telling the viewers
the
story.
He's the guy with the handicap.
He is the narrator.
Yeah.
And, yeah, exactly. He's explaining, oh, yes, exactly, and there was roaring and blah, blah, but you ain't seen nothing yet.
Yeah, that's true.
And then...
That's true. Sorry about that.
Interesting.
It's endlessly fucking charming. And then, yeah, back into the intro scene.
Yeah, so already pre-credits, we know this is not going to take on the...
This isn't the
format
of
a regular episode.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Super excited about that. How about you, Drew?
Well, I was already excited from the teaser at the end of the last episode.
Yeah.
Ooh.
You know, I don't have an innate hatred of Peter Kay. He seems to be playing against type, grey hair and a different accent and such. And it was intriguing. And
I dislike dislike Peter Kay, but I very much enjoy Doctor episodes without the Doctor.
Agreed. How often does that happen, though?
Not often. What, 60-odd years? It's a couple of times?
I only know of one other time, and that was the one that you and I reviewed, Ron.
I mean, that was a damn good episode.
Yes,
I know. That was one of my favourite episodes we podcasted about. Genuinely was. I love that one.
Now, if podcast land, you don't understand that reference, please feel free to go back through our entire back.
What was that episode called?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's one of them. Don't
oh, wow. Mission to the Unknown.
That was a great episode.
Intro scene, and then we're back in with Elton, right?
Yeah, exactly. He's talking about how he joined this group, Linda. Well,
First we hear a little about him, what he likes, what he doesn't
like. Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he likes Elton.
Not to be confused with Tiny Dancer John.
Correct.
He likes a lot of stuff. What he loves more than anything else is...
ELO.
Jeff Lynne.
Because you...
Yeah. The Electric Light Orchestra, which, to be honest, if you don't understand the greatness of that band, you need to stop for a second, go fucking iTunes some shit, and then come back. Because Jeff Lynne and the Electric Light Orchestra are one of the best bands of all time.
Yeah, feel good music.
Everyone happy with that?
Sure. This is also the first time, I think, at the very least in New Who, the first time that we get a glimpse into what sort of civilians perceived of episodes of Doctor Who that we have seen before. Because he has memories, and he shares these memories of, like, when the Slovene arrived in Aliens of London.
And Rose.
And Rose, yeah, it starts
and
off with Rose.
Christmas one with the stupid...
Yeah.
Christmas Invasion.
Nice one! Yay! Particularly
great one.
And
Mental Life.
And this is a foreshadowing because the point, I think the general point of this episode is the ones that are left behind. So the Doctor touches so many lives as he travels through the universe, and what happens with the people that touch him for a second, this numinous, wonderful, all-encompassing, almost omnipresent being, and then get to live their lives.
Sure. It is a little bit weird, though. Like, it seems as though he's the only one who feels left behind. He's the only one who actually realized that something weird was going on, because the rest of mankind just carried about their business.
Now, that's not exactly true, because he found others.
Four?
Exactly.
All right. Fucking deal. Like, that's four. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah, maybe the only four without smartphones. That was real.
Those are the four real humans left.
And he starts off by saying that he met this girl, Ursula. I cannot remember how they met.
Forums.
Is that a blog.
Yeah,
that's what it was.
Yeah. When he was a child, found, you know, saw the Doctor.
He doesn't remember that until later.
Is that until later?
Does he remember seeing the Doctor?
Is it now?
Because
he has a photo of him.
And he's looking up, and the Doctor's looking down at him in a very saturnine way.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
With a look that says, I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry.
I know.
Thanks, kids. Anyway, he goes to scout the web, finds Ursula's blog, and such as he finds Linda. Well, actually, they're not called Linda.
No, not yet.
They're just kindred souls.
Yeah. So there are five of them. Are there five of them?
So
whatever. There's Elton, main character.
Yeah.
Ursula, spoiler alert, love interest. There's Bliss.
Bliss.
Yes, free spirit.
Who's like, yeah, exactly. She's the hippie of the group.
Yeah.
There's Mr. What's his face?
Mr. Skinner.
Mr. Skinner.
And then
Bridget.
Bridget!
Nice one! Yeah. Mr. Skinner being the sort of old authoritarian one. Teacher, perhaps, or something?
Writer.
Aspiring writer, anyway. And Bridget, who it turns out is actually there because she's looking for her daughter. And this sort of is a substitute in a way. She needs to find someone. She can't find her daughter, so she's going to find the doctor. And they form this little club in order to actually find the doctor, but it turns out they're more interested in just having a social life. Yada, yada, yada. So we have already encountered something very similar in Doctor Who. In fact, in the very, very first episode of New Who in Rose, someone who got killed in that scene with the Autons was, what's his face, the dude whom Rose looks up in the pilot. He had his little, like, weird prostitute bang shed in the backyard, and there he, like, had his conspiracy theory website about the doctor. He had a picture of Eccleston.
Do you think he was close to Kennedy? Linda, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I feel like, for some reason, no one here has found his website, and clearly, he should almost be, like, a founding father of this.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest...
But there's no reference to it.
The thing is that we're trying to take this in silo. Like, so the kids and Linda are, like, the only people that are looking. We don't know that for a fact.
No, apparently there
are... Those are just the ones that found each other.
Yeah, there were at least two groups.
Yeah, I mean, that's entirely possible, right?
I suppose so. In fact, hang on, there's even Torchwood.
I mean, in fact, it says this is the London
investigation. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Somewhere
maybe
there
there's one
like
in fucking Binder. Huddersfield.
Hinder.
Yeah, Hinder. Yeah, there's all sorts.
Yeah, in Trowbridge, there's Tinder.
Swipe left for Doctor, swipe right for Rose.
And there are two burgeoning romances here as well. There is Mr. Skinner, was that his name?
Oh, he's Mr. Skinner all over the place.
And Bridget.
And Bridget, correct.
Mm.
And Elton and Ursula.
Mm.
Something's brewing there as well.
Yeah.
But then arrives...
Well, actually, can we take a little sidebar and talk about some of the characters? How do we feel about Elton?
What's the name of the actor? I've seen him in other stuff.
Super, like, proliferate. He does... What was the Green Streak he was big in? That was him.
I'll look him up now. Yeah, I've seen him in stuff.
But either way, how do you feel about him as a character?
As a character?
As a character, please.
I hate to say it, I feel like he's actually quite relatable. He's a super down-to-earth guy. He enjoys the simple pleasures. He doesn't demand much of life. And, no, he's just, like, a nice dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that he has an unenviable task as a side character asked to carry an episode. And, okay, that gives him screen time during which he can develop more depth than your average side character who you can, you know, typically just say, well, they were underdeveloped, and so I hate them or love them, and that's all I have to think.
Mark Warren, by the way.
I recognise his name, even though I didn't recognise his face, apart from as being that guy who's everywhere. I must say, I didn't really like him, but I don't think that's his fault. I think he acted the part as...
Well, he's a little bit of a simpleton.
I know, but see, that's the best thing about it, is that throughout New Who, definitely New Who is worse at this, is that, so we've got all these characters, and they're seemingly ordinary, but the whole point of the doctors say, well, no one's ordinary, you're all numinous, wonderful, like, you know, fucking universe-changing beings. Whereas Elton isn't. He really isn't. He's just a fucking dude. He's just a dude that's trying to live his life, and he's got this weird little thing.
But, sorry, just to add to that, there is a uniqueness to him that even the Doctor acknowledges in this one. Fast forward a little bit in the plot, the Doctor's going to see him as an adult, look at him and go, haven't I met you before?
Sure.
And he has met him before, but when he was a child, and he still recognises him.
Well, see, I guess that's the hint of his uniqueness. That's the reinforcing of the point that the Doctor Who franchise is trying to get at, is that however small your sort of infiltration into the world, you're quite a big part of something. You can affect something that you beyond yourself. Yeah, absolutely. The Doctor is always talking about, like, oh, I've never met a person that I don't think was important. Shit like that is always a sort of running trope. Elton is more that than any other fucking Doctor Who companion or else, you know, because everyone's got something numinous about them in this damn series, but there's actually nothing about Elton that's particularly...
I don't know. I feel like we encounter people like that every now and then.
Yeah, no, but...
What about Rose's dad?
Shit.
What about Rose's dad?
We know, but he's a wheeler dealer. In a parallel fucking life, he's like the...
No, I mean like and real world, quote-unquote...
This that was the thing. There's no real
Rose's dad.
The sort of thing. With this guy, even in the real world, is even less noteworthy than Rose's dad. He's not as charming. He's certainly not as charismatic. He's just a dude that likes ELO.
Yeah, but he's a nice... Whatever.
Anyway, charming is... I'm charmed. I'm thoroughly charmed.
Sure.
Yeah.
We don't really get to know any of the other members of Linda that well.
Not too well, but they're not for that.
No. They're having a good time. They're even playing some ELO.
Yeah, they are.
And then all of a sudden, Victor Kennedy arrives to take over the whole thing. And I don't know about you guys, to me, Fight Club sprang to mind.
Fight Club?
Yes. Wow. And in fact, I feel like that's almost what was missing. They shouldn't have been playing ELO. They shouldn't have been, like, having picnics underground in, like, the basement under the abandoned library. They should have started a fucking Fight Club. But when Victor Kennedy arrives, it is almost identical to the scene in Fight Club when they're in the basement under the pub.
Yeah.
Or the bar. And the guy who owns the bar, like Vinny or whatever, is like, the sign says Vinny's Bar. I'm fucking Vinny. He comes down and, like, the lights go off. Yeah, like, it's exactly the same scene. Anyway.
But wouldn't starting a Fight Club lead the episode into just turning into the entire rest of the plot of Fight Club? Which would be a bit of a diversion.
Okay, that's also a fair point. Another observation. The lights all go off. Victor arrives. He says, lights. All the lights go on. So I'm assuming we're sort of operating under the assumption that he now controls the lights with his mind or with his will. And the first thing that he says after that is, I am your salvation.
Okay. So the second part of that is more significant than the first part. So the first part, I mean, the rest of the episode shows that he's just, he's essentially an intergalactic con man.
Yeah, and he's super, like, he's overdramatic.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so both of them, what he's probably done is rig the fucking lights to turn on when he says, like, you know, with like a he's gone down the market and bought one of those stupid fucking timer thingies. for like £3.99.
I had not considered that at all. Yes, I think you're completely right. He rigged
the lights. Sorry, Drew.
He's cultivated this entire persona, like this incredibly sophisticated persona. He has a monogrammed laptop.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does.
And he shows them photos of the Doctor and lots of information.
Before we move on to that, there's the I'm your salvation. It's like, oh, nice to meet you.
Back because of the
eczema.
Eczema? Do you mean eczema?
I know. It's much worse.
Actually, a really, really good line.
Yeah, it's a good line.
He basically goes, you've lost your way. I'm going to set you straight again.
I'm going to set you homework.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wow, yeah.
In fact, they're even sitting. The way that the whole office is structured is pretty much like a classroom.
Absolutely.
Like, he has his desk at the front and they're all sitting at the... And that's a really good observation.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. You might fucking love geography, but until someone makes you do it... until someone makes you do it, it's no fun anymore.
However, how silly is it? The classroom, the setup of this office is fairly characteristic.
Yeah.
As in caricaturistic. Yeah. He has 5 globes. He has a skull, a bust, 3 bottles of brandy. He has, like, a map on the wall. Like, there is just so much classroom paraphernalia going on.
Oh, well, I mean, the one thing to point out is that Victor, he plays a sound file on the computer. And they hear the sound of the universe. Which is what the TARDIS essentially does.
No, it doesn't.
It definitely sounds less like fucking bagpipes. Like someone stabbing bagpipes than that.
People are going to think you've done a soundbite for that segment.
That was beautiful. That was actually gorgeous.
So we're fervently on the pursuit of the Doctor now with all hands at the helm. And, you know.
And this is where we catch up to the intro.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, apparently the TARDIS was spotted. Cut to what we saw in the intro. He's running up to the thing. We see
Elton
the monster.
Elton in hot pursuit. He finds the monster and the Doctor.
The Doctor.
And the Doctor tells him to run.
Yes.
With a pork chop.
It might be at this point where you're right. But it's also possibly at this point where the Doctor recognises him. Because
probably a little bit of both. But I think the takeaway is that Elton had the Doctor in his grasp and let him go.
Yeah.
Which is where we find enraged Dr. Kennedy.
Yeah. Who now gives them another objective. They now need to find the companion. Drew.
Yes.
Go for it.
Give us a precis.
Okay, crazy of the next scene. They've all got homework. Victor sends them upstairs, but Bliss, could you let me lick my lips?
Oh god.
Stay behind.
Oh, disgusting.
And so they all walk away, and as they're walking away, there's this really audible scream which they don't respond to. They're just like, well, this is London. No, streets are dangerous.
People are screaming all the time.
Leon lived in Archway and we heard screams all the time.
Why would we even turn our heads? We've never heard this scream. We don't know that's her screaming. Fuck this scream. Let them meet their fate.
So now they're off to find Rose.
Yes, essentially. No, actually, this bit comes before... Sorry, I forgot. This bit is before the guy gets back to the doctor and Victor gets angry. Bliss is already gone by that point.
Okay.
She's gone, but not gone.
She's somewhere.
She's got a face full of chair. Victor mentions the bad wolf virus. And at this point, I imagine Russell T. Davis with a huge, a detective board of plot points that he's linking together with bits of string and pins, just laughing maniacally in front of him. How can I foreshadow and retro-shadow everything?
Naked and covered in jam.
And then Stephen Moffat in the shadows going, the fuck is he doing? I don't really understand any of this plot point thing. I'm just going to do my own thing.
Yeah, probably. That's actually very, very close to the truth, I'm sure. When he says the bad wolf virus or whatever it is, he also mentions the Torchwood files.
Mm.
How does Victor Kennedy have access to the Torchwood files?
I think that the idea of Torchwood is this, like, you know, since it was it's incarnate in the 19th century with, Queen Victoria, that it mutated and become a lot of things and sort of branched out. So however Victor Kennedy came across it may have been in the future, may have been in some sort of weird...
So he's a time traveller.
Who knows?
He thinks the TARDIS is just a species.
It might have been that splinter cells of the Torchwood archives became... You know what I'm saying? Like, becomes this, like, spider web.
Mind blown.
Right?
So a future version of Torchwood has somehow splintered and travelled into the past, and that version of Torchwood
Right?
That's very possible. I hope the writers of the BBC are listening to this podcast, because that's a great idea.
We book this shit with 5 new cast members.
Another reference to Bad Wolf. Yada yada, now they need to find Rose. Super difficult to find a single individual.
We can't do this, one. It's impossible, two. How could it ever be done, three?
Oh, that's funny as shit. Come on, that's really funny. Is that not funny?
That is actually... I agree with Nick on this one. I'm really sorry. I'm so sorry. I have to agree with Nick on this one.
For me, it's just labouring the setup of a very obvious joke.
Whatever, it's still funny. I find that funny every time.
Yeah, I think this is funny as well.
Because it is impossible. Every time they're just like, this is ridiculous. How are we going to find this one girl in 7 million people? Oh, it's impossible to ask. You're like, have you seen this girl? Oh, that's Rose Tyler. She lives over there with her mum Jackie.
Yeah.
And they fucking are a bit odd. Fair play. Yeah.
I did write actually funny.
On paper, you agree.
Yes, on actual paper.
That is legally binding, my friend.
At the same time, I am annoyed that, Rose, as exalted as she is, as semi-divine as she becomes in the fucking series, that, poor Bridget's been coming to London for years trying to find her daughter, but, she's just some bitch on drugs. She can never be found. Rose, she can be found in 10 seconds because she's important.
Fair enough. I did not think about it like that.
We'll come back to this later.
That's incredibly sad and very poignant. Okay, so now he's...
How can we enlighten this podcast? Oh, Jackie Tyler.
Jackie Tyler is amazing in this fucking episode. Have you ever been more sexually attracted to Jackie Tyler than you have in this episode?
Jackie clearly engages Elton in conversation because she has a hankering for his man, Paul.
As do I. So I said that again. The great, great part of the comic writing. He'd read Clandestine Arts for Dummies and has sort of memorised the 4 or 5 things you have to do. And he gets completely ingratiated, but it's the other way around.
Yeah, Jackie just does the whole job for him.
Absolutely. And honestly, the best line is like, oh, here I am, Elton. We don't know
each other. Actually, let's soundbite that.
Oh, let's.
Soundbites?
I tell you what, Elton. Here we are, complete strangers, and I'm flashing you my knickers.
Thanks, Jackie.
Whoa.
And that's amazing. I think that's really funny. I think that's awesome. And actually him sort of going back and she holds everything close to her chest.
I've made a note of which soundbite that is as well. Shall we soundbite that as well? 22 minutes and 15 seconds in.
She keeps everything very close to her chest.
That's a hell of a chest.
There you go.
Thanks, Ursula.
That's a great pair of soundbites.
It is fun, and I think it works solely because it's already set up as a parody episode. It's a comedy episode. It's the Star Trek 4 of New Who. And in that sense, it's almost legitimate.
Well, it's legitimate in the fact that... So, let's say 10 is the most buffoon-esque of all the Doctors up to this point.
That's definitely that? Wait, no.
No?
I'm saying no mainly because I don't know the other classic Doctors.
Okay,
well.
New Who. So
New Who?
From him,
so wait,
as
hang
a departure
of
from...
the two
as a, no,
so
as a,
far,
as,
this one guy is the most...
Alright, you shut your face. As a departure from Eccleston, he's more buffoonish. He plays the buffoon every so often to become to become the genius.
Yeah.
He plays the buffoon to become
sure.
the genius.
He's a savant.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing, he's an idiot savant.
Yeah.
Whereas Elson is just an idiot. There's no point where he becomes like this savant that he was playing everyone all at the same time. No, he's just a
I would have
idiot.
Loved that though. Imagine the alternate ending of Love and Monsters where Elton stumbles out off screen
absolutely
and we get
not.
To follow him and all of a sudden he's like Kaiser Soze.
No, no,
everyone.
We do that shit all the fucking time with Tennant or whatever. It's just he's an idiot and he lucked in. He just lucked in.
Dude, I'm not disagreeing with you. Drew is disagreeing with you.
He's a real
you.
Idiot.
Look at Drew's
device.
Face. Drew is totally disagreeing with you.
You should see my face, podcast land. It is a sight to behold. I listened to him talk for a fair amount of this episode, and at no point did I think, yeah, I'd like to meet you again afterwards for some drinks.
Yeah,
no,
nor would I.
No,
would
absolutely
I.
Not.
I still think that he's endearing in a way.
I would hang out with him.
Well, you go do that, and Drew and I are going to do something else. Rory, you're invited as well. Miriam,
thanks.
Are you up for it?
For being the last person to be invited to this.
Shit, I have to cut that bit. Okay. Okay, so one thing leads to another, and Elton is now thoroughly infiltrated Jackie's life. Up to the point where it becomes very, very clear Jackie really, really wants him.
She's trying to jump some bones.
I mean, she is a sexual predator. She, like, spills a drop of wine on him, like, you should definitely take off your shirt now.
And then waterboards him with wine.
She's asking him to swap one inner sanctum for another.
That was brilliant! Oh, Drew, seriously.
Well, at some point, he also reports back about, you know, how hard it was to get into Jackie's,
Knickers?
House. Well, and everybody's really impressed. And I'm just making note that Bridget also buys it at this point, and so they're down to three.
Oh, yes. Oh, we totally skipped that one. We totally skipped that. Yes, very true.
Yeah. Oh, that was actually a fairly dark fucking moment, because Dr. Kennedy intimates that he's got some information by her about her daughter.
Yeah, exactly.
Dark as shit,
isn't
it?
It's super dark. And also, it follows on immediately after the sort of the clarification, the establishing of
the
Bridget and exactly.
Mr.
And what's his face,
Skinner. Yeah, it's like I'll drop her to Bridget won't mind to the station or whatever. And I've got some. And it's fucking dark as shit. And honestly, that was upsetting as a moment.
Yeah, it is upsetting because it's not treated as the dark moment that it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so fast forward back, she spilled wine on his shirt.
Yeah. I particularly liked in this scene the nice crossed wires where he's still trying to get out of her where Rose is, and Jackie just replies with, oh, don't worry, she's far away, we're not going to be disturbed.
Yeah.
I thought that was nice.
Before we do that, there was a little bit before when he's asking about Rose, like right early on when he was around and he was like, so she travelling? It's like, yeah, it's like, oh, should we be friends? Yeah, just with friends.
Mates.
Just with mates. Just with mates. And that's sad as shit too, actually. That whole, like, and that's the foreshadowing of the protection of a mother.
Yeah, that's also the ones who get left behind. Yeah. Where she says, like, oh, well, she has a mobile phone and she calls now and then, not as often as I'd like.
How bad did you all feel as, like, just
for
children? Just as children of people. Like, do you ever just think, like, fuck, I don't call my parents enough?
Yeah,
anyone else feel like that?
Yeah.
I felt like that in that moment. I was
definitely.
Like, shit, I should call my parents more.
Oh, God damn, I got to text
my right? Everyone feel like that?
Take a break to text
my
parents.
Time out,
right,
it's all text our mums.
Yeah, that was the thing.
And we're back.
Okay, so Elton is now in the bathroom.
Yeah.
He is psyching himself up to banging Jackie.
He's taking off his shirt.
He's not just doing that.
He's
doing
the deodorant. Yeah. He's doing some shadow boxing.
He's like doing the helicopter with his willy.
Yeah.
Just to, you
he's
know.
He's not doing that.
He's absolutely.
Every man does the helicopter in preparation.
He has trousers
it,
on.
It kind of increases.
It loses. Like you stretch, it's like yoga.
Yeah, yeah.
Trousers on.
You can do it.
You can definitely do it with your trousers.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever.
I couldn't tell.
Every dude does the helicopter, does the propeller, whatever you call it in your country.
Okay.
And anyway, so he's in the bathroom. He's doing that. He's like, oh my god, this is the ultimate step five. in Victor Kennedy's five-step plan of infiltration, I'm gonna bang the crap out of Jackie Tyler.
What it's a jerk.
Infiltration and then penetration.
Yeah, yes,
what
exactly.
What a total jerk.
Yeah.
Like, he's trying to bang her just to get to his daughter, which he wanted information from.
Do you think that he actually likes her a little bit now?
No, not at all. It's just playing his part.
See, I wonder if he does.
No, see, the point.
Well, in that case, he's even more of a jerk because he fancies the other girl as well.
Well, the rest of the narrative is the opposite, isn't it? So that he was so wrapped up.
Exactly.
And everyone can be wrapped up. Everyone can be just like some tunnel vision. But he actually accessed humanity at some point, and he was like, "Ah, it's fucked up. Let's not do this."
You know what? I'm going to agree a little bit with both of you. I think he's a total jerk because to begin with, it's like, "Hey, I'm going to get laid. I'm going to do this," without coming clean and telling her what my actual motivation is. So I agree with you on that. But I think I agree with you as well because later on, when she basically denies him, he, at the same time, has this epiphany of, actually, you know what? I like the other girl. I like the bass player.
Also, no, he was just like, yeah, this is fucked up. Do you know what? You seem cool. Let's have a pizza. You seem nice.
You should have, like, the first girl from the beginning. You should have changed his mind.
But not everyone has that morality, like, from straight on. Like, we all have weird little, like, trysts and do things, and then we
try to sort
ourselves out. Okay,
but he was trying to bend that woman to get to his daughter. That's not cool.
We've all done weird stuff.
Yeah, we've all tried to find some woman's daughter.
I've all been trying to find an alien and trying to bang some woman's daughter. We've all been there.
Drew, right?
I must be the odd one out.
Because you're still at it, I get it.
Did you guys poop?
Sorry. That's super duper interesting. When I watched this and when I re-watched this, and I watched this twice in the last 48 hours, I hate myself for that. I didn't see him as suddenly coming to the conclusion that, oh shit, actually, this is fucked up. We should just be friends because you're actually a good person. When I watched this, as in, like, his facial expressions, all his mannerisms, what I got out of that, and I think you're right, I think I was wrong, but what I got out of that was, oh crap, he's now devised a new strategy. Like, oh, actually, I'm gonna play, it's sort of almost hard to get. I'm gonna say, I don't want to hear anything about your daughter, I just want to be your friend. We're gonna watch some telly, and then slowly but surely, you're gonna tell me everything I want to know.
The dialogue belies that, doesn't it? Because later on, he's just like, the voiceovers, you know what I learned later, it's like, whilst I really liked Jackie, I knew who I liked really more. And then we did a little montage of it.
No, you're totally right.
Yeah.
Also, can we just point out that when he comes out of the bathroom, he has the worst ever, like, opening line to a sexual act ever.
It's a bit hot,
but it's about to get hotter. At which point he goes out to get a pizza, and we see him coming back wearing the shirt, and his shirt is now clean. Just to point that out.
See, I was irked by Jackie just going, well, I destroyed your shirt, but, you know, screw your shirt. You know where the laundrette is.
Yeah. Let's speed through the rest of this. He comes back. She's found the photo of Rose that he was carrying around in his jacket for God knows what reason. Why is it still in his jacket?
I know, but, I mean, he was using that to find Rose, wasn't he, initially?
That must have been weeks ago.
Yeah, but errant. Errant misplaced.
Okay, fine.
He's no good at being a detective. He doesn't know he has to cover his tracks.
He's only got steps 1 to 5, which is meet a person, penetrate them. Like, has no idea what to do with the fucking photo, does he? Like, he's not got a filing system devised.
Fair. Very true.
What did you guys think of Jackie's big confrontation scene?
Really good.
Her reaction?
Yeah.
Oh, it was perfect.
It's very
perfect.
Good.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I still believed it.
Could have been different.
I felt for Jackie at that moment. I felt really bad for her.
And I felt the selflessness in her, which you don't usually get from Jackie during... So, like, she's like, you know, she wants a daughter, like, she wants to do this, and she wants to do that. She's like, no, you don't understand what it's like to be left behind, but fuck you, I ain't never giving them up.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
It's actually a really, really good little soliloquy at first.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, it breaks Elton's heart as well.
What did you think about
it? No, it doesn't, because he didn't care for her, I'm sure.
No, he absolutely did, because he then goes back and he has the whole tantrum in front of Victor Kennedy. He's like, how dare you? We're going out of here.
I beg to differ. I don't think he cared for her at all.
Why?
Because he only wants to get the information to get to the doctor, which
later,
is his only purpose.
But later,
but the next
he
scene,
has,
the
he,
next
he,
scene,
he repents, doesn't he?
In the following scene, he basically disbands Linda. Oh. Like he goes back to the cellar, the basement under the library, and he confronts what's his face again, Kennedy, and goes like, "She was a good person, and we used her. We just used her, and that was." that you've made this not fun anymore. No wonder the other... Oh, yeah. He says, like, no wonder the other two left. What's her face and what's her face? Bridget and something. Bliss.
Yes.
She was in front of me all this time. Yeah, like, oh, God, I didn't realize it, but the woman that I really want to be with...
I shouldn't be doing this. I should be with her.
Exactly.
And that's when
you should have realized that.
That's very true.
You can't say that he's an ingenious liar and a complete imbecile at the same time.
Yeah,
he's one of the two.
Because that's when he asks her out to the Chinese. Mr. Skinner, do you want to come as well? But not to the Chinese.
Really fucking scene. Yeah, that's a great scene.
That's hilarious. Absolutely fantastically well done. Except I would say he doesn't ask her out. He bosses her around like crazy. He just
You understand that? That's the first time he's ever been a boss in his life. You could tell, can't you? That's the idea of it. It's just like, I've never been a forthright person and now I'm doing it. Yeah. I'm stepping up to you, Doug. Yeah, and we're going out on a date and you're coming with, but not to the Chinese if you don't mind. And that's absolutely how I'd approach that situation. I was quite clear, I've asked everyone, I was like, if you don't mind, if you wouldn't come to the Chinese.
hilarious bit of writing.
It's
there.
The most British thing anyone could accomplish.
Yada yada yada. Now Mr. Skinner is asked to stay behind. What's her face? Ursula and Elton, they leave. We hear him screaming, they don't hear him screaming, he's been absorbed, and then they go back.
She forgets her phone.
Yeah. Just in order to put a pin in this.
Mm.
They step into the lift, they close the lift doors, they take the lift down, they open the lift doors, they step out of the lift. Pin. That's it. We'll return to this in a moment. Carry on.
Okay, so they're Dr. Kennedy's reading a paper.
He is indeed.
And they ask where Mr. Skinner is.
Like, oh, he went to the bathroom.
We don't have a bathroom.
We usually use the pub across the road.
Yes. But Mr. Kennedy, look at your hands.
Look at the rest of me.
And we see...
Can someone do that in a more northern accent? Rory, can you say look at the rest of me in a northern accent, please?
Look at the rest of me.
Yes.
Excellent.
Bang on.
Fucking hell, I'm being absorbed. Also, the paper says Saxon leads polls with 64%.
100%.
Which is the first mention of Mr. Saxon.
Yeah.
Just wanted to get that in.
Yep, that does happen.
Holy crap! I did not make that connection. That is awesome.
And now Russell T. Davies is back in your mind, covered in jam, naked in front of his board of women.
With a hula hoop.
Yes.
Oh, God. Russ, and your magic hula hoop.
With two guards as giant wasps. I don't really understand the joke, I just wanted to make it.
It's an arresting image.
So it turns out, now we get to, we learn what he is. He is, actually let's soundbite this as well, how he gets his name.
He's some sort of absorbathon. An absorberling. An absorberloff.
Yes, alive.
He's an absorberloff.
Which, as a great aside that Leon pointed out, what was the kid's name? Grantham.
Anyway.
William Grantham, sounds like a great shout, is a 9-year-old's, you know, best effort at a competition to invent a Doctor Who enemy, bad guy from a Blue Peter.
Yeah, it was a competition. This guy won.
Amazing. It's a kid.
It's a kid, yeah.
Yeah, and by the way, they did it again with Capaldi. The very first episode of Peter Capaldi included some items that some kids have drawn.
Really?
Yes. Like the spectrum that the Centaurian uses.
Yeah.
And the glove that, what's her name? The green woman?
Oh, the detective, the
lizard. The lizard woman, yeah. That the lizard woman uses. That those two were designed by...
Lady something.
That won this competition, so it's kind
of a... We should know her name, really.
Absolutely.
Doctor Who podcast, shouldn't I?
It's a recurring thing that they make kids choose what they want to
really
have
like that.
On the show. Yeah, that's cool.
Agreed.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
But anyway, well done, William Grantham.
You're going to grow up to be a really messed up person.
At this point, you're 20. You've been doing coke for like 4 years.
So, at this point, Peter Kay's accent completely changes. He's gone from being Mr. Victor Kennedy to some fucking Melvin Bolton alien bastard.
A lot absorbable off, yes, I like that one. And he's I'm just big sloth-like creature. Don't hurt me.
Yeah, and we also see like he has absorbed. We hear the voice of Mr. Skinner. Skinner's face is on his like left love handle.
So do you know what I'm saying about this?
What is that?
Presumably his entire, like...
The rest of his body is in.
His entire, like, fucking trajectory as a form have been absorbing things and people and different... Where the fuck are all they?
Well, yeah, where are the others?
There are faces in more advanced sort of stages of decomposition.
So is that what it is? It's that they're too fresh to have been...
On his shoulder, on his right shoulder, there's what looks like just a screaming mouth.
Yeah.
That is almost entirely absorbed.
Yeah, there's some very...
And on the left shoulder, there's just like a scrotum.
Yeah, why is it always the face? Why isn't it like, oh, these aren't my balls. These are the balls of someone I absorbed once.
Yeah, absolutely.
The glasses are quite hard to absorb as, you know, Ursula.
God damn, that's in my notes as well.
Yeah.
Really annoying. Anyway, yeah, spoiler alert. So Ursula is absorbed as well.
The thing about Ursula's absorption is that then she gains insight into... Because once you're absorbed, she can read his mind. And says that you're next, run.
Yeah.
And then we're off.
At which point, let's return to the pin.
Mm.
How did he get downstairs? Where is he? He is downstairs. He took a lift
elevator,
down.
Yeah.
The Absorbaloft jumps onto the desk. It's actually In an instant.
Yeah.
It's a pretty, like, quick-moving, like, fast-moving creature, right? Mm. Starts chasing him ASAP. Boom. Cut to Elton's running out the front door, which is a lift ride and, you know, upstairs away, and the Absorbaloft in hot pursuit. God damn it! What the fuck? The wine stain on the shirt, and now we forget about the fact that they're downstairs.
And remember, behind the lift there was a light.
Holy crap, yes, thank you. Very difficult to explain. I will include a screenshot on the post on whobackwhen.com, but it looks as though... they've taken two different sets. Like, the back part of the lift is actually a component that is meant to be, like, a door facing the outdoors. You can see it's a window, it has light coming in from the outside, but behind it is a staircase.
Mm. And
with sunlight.
With sunlight, yeah. Screenshot, whatever, pissed me off.
I look forward to this informative image. Can I just bring one other reference in at this point?
Go for
rushing
it.
Towards the end.
Yes.
Does anyone remember from the late 90s that Belly's Gonna Get Ya advert?
Yes, Reebok. It's amazing.
And
advert.
It was, if you watch the advert again, it is exactly like Peter Kay chasing the guy through London. It's... Russell T Davies must have been...
There is a fucking app in there somewhere.
Yeah.
I would run away from a Absorbaloft on an app somewhere.
Yeah. It is just worth watching, because it's a fantastic advert.
It's
I watched it again.
Advert.
I'll embed it on the same page.
Other footwear is available.
Okay, so now he's being chased... Cut to
dead
cul-de-sac.
Yeah,
exactly. The Absorbaloft is there. He's caught him. Voila, the TARDIS materializes.
In the exact right location. Not, you know, 50 years away or a continent apart or a different world or the
this
other
time,
end of the
no
universe.
Problem whatsoever getting exactly
they can just
to the place they want to go.
One guy, one human heat signal to its precise location. That would be useful in any other episode.
Yeah, it would.
But whatever.
In fact, any other Tennant episode...
Yes, Rose is annoyed at poor Elton, who is about to be absorbed, but he's upset her mum, so he's the bad guy. And then there's a joke about the lengths of words. Can anyone remember what the twin planet is?
Clom.
No. The twin planet is...
Clom?
No.
The original Raxa planet.
Totally.
Raxa Quirico Falvatoris.
Yeah. And Peter Kay's a northerner, so he's from...
No, I spit on them.
Clom.
Clom.
Play up, Clompe.
No, it's actually Clom.
You shut your mouth. That was very close to something very dear to my heart. You stop.
We're from up north. No need for long word sound things where we're from. You daft git.
Yeah. Crude it is. I'll just fancy carrot sticks.
What the fuck's a pricey?
I would happily join you guys, but I can't do the accent.
So, yeah, Kay's gambit is to taunt the Doctor, because he won't let Elton be killed. He's a soft southern bastard, even though Tennant is Scottish.
Oh, you value laugh, you softy.
But then the Doctor does his thing of pausing slightly and moving his mouth to show that he's badass.
Yeah. Mm. Like, well, passionate, maybe. Something else, probably. Nice, not so much.
Yes.
But I was like, what's the plan? It's like, oh yeah, I'll get the doctor to commit suicide and just, I guess, by the honor system, I'll let this dude live and I'll get his TARDIS and leave.
Yeah, no, but it's the flavor factor.
The flavor factor?
The flavor factor. He wants to eat the doctor for the flavor.
Oh yeah, yeah, exactly. Oh yeah, yeah. No, that's, so okay, no, that's a separate matter and that's
there's
very
no,
true.
There's no plan. He just wants to eat the doctor. That was it. That's like his...
Basically, this is the first episode of Doctor Who that is led entirely by hunger. The guy, he wants to eat... Oh, actually, maybe not the first one.
Not hungry.
Hungry?
I'm so hungry. Mm. No, exactly.
One thing leads to another. The doctor suggests...
Well, yeah, the doctor doesn't suggest anything. All he says is, well, I think the people you've absorbed might want to do something.
That's pretty vague. I mean, it's a huge gamble. And he also says this as the absorber of his hand is approaching Elton's head. Like, there's no guarantee that he's not just going to grab on to Elton's head and absorb him and then turn around and go, sorry, what were you saying?
Says you with your 30 years of living, but when you're 900 years old, chilling. What's time to you?
Yeah, you want to savour the moment.
You want to, you don't defuse a bomb when you got 20 to 30 seconds left. You go for like 2-3.
Okay, that is true. You were going to make the same point that I'm thinking of.
Yeah, well, finish my point.
I like
Why that. Not actually tell them how to save his life? Why not actually tell Bridges and Skinner and Ursula?
Maybe he doesn't know. Maybe he just knows the fact that there are four people in there with, they're still sense of cognition, but also intact with the absorber off's brain. So he doesn't know how they can affect it. He just knows they can.
We had this conversation as well when we were rewatching it. Incorrectly, I assumed that, okay, if she can read his mind, she can manipulate his mind. And maybe together they will be able to manipulate him. But no, that's not the case. They all pull in different directions.
Yeah,
which, how do they do that? But whatever, they all, well, I guess they push in different directions and he
loses. Which they could have done at any point, presumably.
Yeah, you've just created yourself a new fucking form. You don't know how it works sometimes.
Yeah. He drops the cane that we failed to mention that he has. Elton breaks the cane. The guy turns into mush and is absorbed by the earth.
Which, okay, so that's
how ironic.
You say the earth, sorry, I just need to jump in here because...
Yeah, absorbs him.
No, it's not the earth, it's paving slabs.
Yeah.
And okay, this does serve a plot point later on, but could they not have filmed the scene on bare ground? Is there none in Cardiff?
Yeah, but then you'd have the paving slab motif.
Yeah, I feel like they could have, you know, involved the earth nevertheless.
No, I think the paving slab is important, but do you know what the thing that annoys me about that all is that, so does the entire inhabitant of Clom have a fucking walking stick?
Yeah, everyone must walk around with one of those.
With some sort of avatar or some sort of, like...
So how does it work? As in, what is it that it does? What was it called again? A limitation field.
How were you born with that?
I wonder if the limitation... Is it... As in, how does it work? What does it do? So the limitation field prevents what is naturally occurring in the physiognomy of a Clom, namely to just, I guess...
Universe, not just Clom.
Join with everything. So maybe it's... At a certain point, when you've absorbed so many different species, or when you've used... Maybe when you're so powerful in terms of absorption, you need to contain it.
No, that can't work.
Technology. I mean, because otherwise they wouldn't survive as a species. They'd get born immediately.
Does it not work like that? Can it? Like, can a thing? If it's a field, if it's just a field, a benign field, it just works on sensitive absorption and non-absorption.
Okay, how about this? Hang on. Here's a reference. It is the twin planet of Raxacorico Farpatorius.
Mm.
The Raxacoricos, they had a containment field of their own to hold them inside the human shape.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is the parallel to that, right?
Parallels are strong, but yeah.
Okay, well, I think it is a parallel. I mean, it's the twin planet, so this is the twin gadget, right?
Well, yeah, but like, the idea of containment and absorption is difficult. It's different, isn't it? Like, so for you to, if you're pure absorption, if all you do is everything you touch, you absorb or absorbs you, and then we have to contain a field around that, it's very different to just make you skinnier. It's different. I said, those are different fucking physical things. Like,
yes, but okay. So in my mind, the way I'm imagining this is that the Clom, the whatever, the Absorbaloff, is actually just this massive pile of gloop. He's actually just like absorbing gloop.
Like in DS9.
Yes, exactly. What's his face? Also a single syllable.
Odo.
Odo. Two syllables. Well done. Whatever. So he's just a massive pile of gloopy gloppy shit, right? and this field, this containment field, is keeping him bipedal.
Yeah.
Just like the containment field of the Rex Corcophalopatorians was keeping them skinny. I don't know. No, it makes no sense. That's my point. It makes no fucking sense.
That's the most upsetting thing about this episode.
Okay, let's seriously wrap this up.
All right, okay.
Well, we're so close to
I think Quarter to it, actually, it's all off has been absorbed, and the Doctor, to the great, relief of Elton, both reveals himself as I was the person there that wasn't in time to save your mother.
Yeah, who was killed by an elemental shade escaped from the Howling Hordes.
And that's not a thing, is it?
No,
we thought it might be a thing, because it sounds awesome, right? That sounds like a
Harry Potter thing.
Yeah, but it's not a thing.
We looked it up, it only ever appears in this episode, so far.
Moffat, if you're listening, try to resurrect that, because it's better than everything you think of.
It's definitely better than the...
I was just going to say it might lend some more dignity to this episode.
Is it not better than everything he's thought of since? Fuck that. Just go up with the elemental shade, whatever the fuck that is. That sounds awesome.
A living shadow.
Yeah.
That escaped from the Howling Hordes, which must be like the most amazingly badass prison.
Exactly.
Just populated by shadows.
Sick as fuck.
Totally awesome.
Make that happen.
Another thing, just Elton, up to this point, had completely forgotten that that was the night that his mother died.
Repressed.
Yeah. Yeah, true. Which then leads to...
An ELO cue. That's what it leads to.
Yes, and also...
A dramatic piece of music so that his mother can leave him in the middle of a field.
I was going to say, a terrible montage that leads up to a shot that gives the impression that she willingly abandoned him. It's not a question of having lost her. It's a tragic moment in his life, the realization of, holy shit, this is a memory that I completely repressed. I kept this so deep in my subconscious that I couldn't piece this together, even though it's so obvious. But they should have done something better with it. Instead, they just turn it into the shittiest music video ever.
Yeah, his mother had to go and play some rugby.
Yeah. They're like, oh, I'm going to leave you in the middle of this field. Yeah. Wave goodbye. Cut. Done.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's not very good.
And he does a lot of stuff in his final monologue. Brilliant and terrible things combined to make me. I can't tell them apart. Smile. The Doctor changed things for better or for worse. Or he tends to be very briefly around when things are mostly happening without him. As Nick has said, this is a story about the people left behind. There's a bit of foreshadowing that things will be bad for Rose and Jackie, which RTD is just slipping into every episode now because we're getting the end of the season. And then the Doctor gives him one little bonus before he goes.
Yeah. Yeah, bonus indeed. He gives him a blowjob slab. So it...
best slab ever.
Slabs go.
I've been fucking slabs for 20 years, and like it's not been half as rewarding as Elton's.
Yeah, so he managed, using his magical wand, quote unquote, his sonic screwdriver, to regenerate part of Ursula, namely her face.
Yeah, the last absorption victim, because that one's obviously the most important, because they weren't absorbed before.
Yeah. Now, Elton lives with a paving slab. Two questions about this slab, though.
Okay.
Number one, can anyone please explain the logistics of being granted a BJ from this slab?
100%.
And number two, how big a dick was the Doctor for reanimating her? For regenerating her face on a slab? It's like, here, you're now going to be immortal. She says herself, I'm going to live forever. Your face is going to be on a slab.
Forever. She doesn't say I'll live forever.
No, she says she's not going to age.
Yeah, she doesn't
she's not
say...
gonna age.
That doesn't mean she's not going to die.
Okay, fine. Whatever. Doesn't matter if she's immortal or not. She's not going to age. Her face is on a fucking paving slab. Voila, this is your life now.
She's quite peaceful.
Yeah, because she's pot slab. Like, that's no life.
No, I see. I think
he's just using her as, like, this... What are they called? Fleshlight. He's using her as a goddamn concrete fleshlight.
No. That is all an assumption you made. Maybe it's just rimming.
Oh, yeah, maybe rimming
maybe
as well.
Maybe it's just rimming.
Fine, maybe it's just
maybe
rimming.
Maybe they just kiss once in a while.
No, they have a bit of a love life. There's clear...
No, maybe it's that.
They have a love
life. It's kissing and rimming.
Kissing and rimming. Oh, man.
By the
logistics. That's a great life right there. Kissing and rimming.
Kissing and rimming.
That's how you cement a relationship.
Ah! You were
truly being picked up by the microphone. That was brilliant.
I'm so glad that you had a little sleep to fucking sort that out. Like,
your question about the logistics.
Yeah.
Was that because she's got a couple of inches of face sticking out of concrete. A couple of inches of slab.
Yeah, because
there's no depth to it.
There's no depth to it. This is basically like, what's the alien in N002?
Oh, the stretched skin, of course.
Yeah, the stretched skin, lady, yeah. Some sort of dot Delta 7. Cassandra dot Delta 7, whatever.
Yeah.
Moisturize me.
Exactly, yes.
That's what she said.
Yeah, yes.
It is.
Lady Cassandra, it's the same thing. Like, imagine getting a BJ from Lady Cassandra. It's just like slipping a dick ring on and off all the time. It's like, what's the pleasure in that?
You'd be worried you'd hear a tearing sound.
Where does it all go?
That's my question. Explain the logistics of
paving slab beach. I got this.
Are you going to say bell end only? Is that it?
Because no, I've got this.
Now
like normal humans,
she's called Belinda.
Like normal humans, actually, our heads are not that deep.
So are you suggesting that the throat goes down into
it goes down
into the paving slab?
Holy
yes,
shit.
Am I your hero? Audible high five. Fantastic. That explains it. This paving slab has a throat.
There you go. What's up?
Nice one. And also, if it is actually just kissing and rimming, then we don't even need to contemplate the logistics. She clearly has a tongue.
So if that controversy has been concluded, all that's left is for the last piece of monologue, which is for Elton to say, you know what's more important than my mum dying and me just remembering? Not conforming to social stereotypes and the socially established patterns of life.
It really is.
Maybe it's so far in the past that he's actually realised that not only did he have something to grieve, he has done the grieving, it's behind him now.
Is the mum dying actually necessary?
No.
At all?
Not at all.
Because they could have just avoided all of this.
No, it is.
No, I agree with
the Drew Hammer. The doctor could have saved the mother, and then there's no fucking problem at all.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but he could have done a lot of fucking things throughout history. And
yeah, and Russell T. Davis could have written this episode a bit fucking better.
No, the point of...
That was a shitting good point.
No, you're all terrible. The point of the losing the mother of is to validate his obsessiveness of why he needed to find the doctor, or why he was obsessed with...
Everyone, in a sense, has lost something.
Exactly.
Well, okay, actually, Skinner and Bliss haven't lost anything.
We didn't really get into the backstory, but they... You know, the point being is that one obsesses over something that they've lost and then they found each other.
Yeah.
There's no fucking imperative to him to go find anyone else other than this.
Yeah.
There you go.
Actually, strike everyone, it's just his motivation, his story turns out to be much, much closer to Bridget's story.
Yeah.
Than anyone else's. In fact, no one else's.
Yeah. Well, it's just a compelling thing.
Where was the doctor when all the people died in this episode? Where was he? What was he doing?
He was doing stuff.
Other stuff. I think the...
He may, in fact, have travelled back in time and saved the... and just barely saved Elton's life, but failed to save his mum's life.
I think the intimation of the Doctor as being this all-encompassed saviour can't be... I mean, because people die all the fucking time, right? Like,
no, but I mean, the people that have been absorbed by the alien, he wasn't there.
He wasn't there.
In the entire episode.
That's another theme here. It actually clarifies that the Doctor is just one person and he can't save everyone. So
exactly.
Just as he couldn't save the mum, he couldn't save the people who were
involved. Actually, it's a window into every story we see of the Doctor, is that we turn up and the Doctor's saving the day, but actually, fuck load of people died before he turned up. For a lot of the stories.
I really hate to say it, but despite this episode being a gargantuan pile of garbage, it is incredibly insightful.
Isn't it just?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It is.
You all shut your damn mouths. This is the most emotionally intelligent fucking writing.
You're just telling me to shut up because you agree with me.
Yeah, no, because you agree with me. It is the
so
most.
You are now irrelevant.
It is the most emotionally intelligent writing happening in Doctor Who right now.
That's entirely untrue, and let's please wrap this up.
Reviews.
Rory?
Well, where to start with this episode, and indeed where to end? I feel like if I'd seen this episode, I would have loved it.
You should watch it.
Awesome. On a scale from 0 to 5,
you've convinced me to watch this episode. So I'm giving this out of 5, I'm giving this a 12. Amazing.
Okay,
Drew Hammer.
Well, this was always going to be a difficult episode to review. I didn't see it originally. Ponkin confidently assured me, on JD's word, that it was the worst episode of all time by a long way. And 2 minutes in, when they're doing the whole Benny Hill Scooby-Doo thing of running between
doors... Oh, we didn't even talk about the Scooby-Doo thing, yeah.
Yeah. that was... I mean, it set it up as a comedy episode, but God, there are better ways to do that.
Yeah,
and then you have a monster, and he's just a dog, and he's distracted by a thing of meat, and you don't see him again. But I don't want to tell you the whole episode again. You just heard it all again. I thought it was all right. I thought they could have used more ELO cues, like Turn to Stone, for instance. Would have been pretty good.
Holy
sweet,
crap.
Sweet Talking Woman. For little Ursula. And... You know, there are many, many more, which I can't even remember, but because I'm rushed, I'm out of time, so I'm going to give it a 2.0.
Holy shit. Okay, Mirimo, what are you giving it?
I thought that Elton had been a little bit immoral, even though you guys have something to say about it.
Sure, whatever.
Anyway, at first I thought this was a really, really rubbish episode, but by the end of it, I think I will give it, because this is my first rating... I'll give it 2.9.
Whoa.
Holy moly.
Yeah. Whoa, that is more than halfway
is
up
it?
The scale.
Oh, I might be too generous.
It goes to 5.
Right, 2.5.
Halfway up the scale.
2.5.
That's what I did with my first one. It's a good place to start.
Yeah, it is, yeah. I'm going to keep it super duper short because of post-production
for
this episode.
You edit this bit. It's just one solid bit of... Review gold.
Yes, it is now, mate. Well done.
As I said in the very, very beginning of recording this episode was nowhere near as bad as I remembered it being. And I also want to clarify, Drew, I'm sorry that I told you that this was going to be the worst episode ever, but that is... And you know what? I hold JD partly responsible for this. Because he has told me repeatedly that it's the worst episode ever, and I trust him. And you know what? He's not far from the truth. So far, this is probably... I don't know if it is the worst one so far. It is a terrible episode, but it does have some core values that are good. It has some interesting sci-fi concepts, and for an episode that isn't a Doctor episode, it's a Doctor Who episode, but almost entirely without the Doctor, it's not bad. Plus, I really like Jackie in this one. I'm giving it a 1.4.
Could you not bump it up a bit because it's so value for money?
No, 1.4.
Okay. Okay, so you're all wrong, basically, on this one.
I gave it 12.
You're wrong for different reasons. of new Who, so certainly 10 in era, Hugh.
Yeah.
10 you, is that genuinely, I can't see a more emotionally intelligent set of writing. I can't see better character development without him there. It's almost like Jacob's Room, you know, like Virginia Woolf thing, where you can give character exposition without him there. It's about those that are left behind. It's the mark that the Doctor makes. We don't get to see that ever because he's always fucking around saying stuff. We never get to see that. We get to see that he's a reception preceding him, but not following him. We never get to see that. And this is part of it.
So you're saying that this is... sorry to cut you off there.
Yeah.
This is emotionally and intellectually more interesting or on a higher level than, for example, The Girl in the Fireplace.
Yes. The Girl in the Fireplace was... romantically intriguing, great, but not emotionally intelligent. It's facile.
Really?
Yes, it's relatively facile to make a romance. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Romance through the Stars is a fucking time-honored tradition. To understand the wake of a time-traveling god.
How about this?
It's a difficult thing to accomplish.
How about this? Sorry, cutting you off again, mid-review. The one who was left behind, we have another Tennant episode. Mm-hmm. We have School Reunion.
Yeah.
Where Sarah Jane, who was left behind.
No, I get that. And that was very good, actually. That is probably the most like what we're seeing. All right, I'll go for the rating. I'll go for 4.
Holy 4. Shit. Despite there being an absolutely ridiculous alien...
Yeah, it doesn't matter about it. That's the point.
Despite the parody aspect of this episode.
All of that is just that someone for the BBC needed a fucking, action point. It'd have been better without it.
Okay.
It'd have been better without Plom. 4. And, yeah.
Okay. All right. 4. We also, ladies and gentlemen, here's a nice little surprise. We have another pre-recorded review. Put your hands together for the one and only JD.
This is the Doctor Who episode where there is very little Doctor, very little Rose, and very little good to be said about it. In a world where we have episodes like The Day of the Doctor, The Night of the Doctor, The Time of the Doctor, we have Peter Davison being absolutely amazing. We will have adventures such as the absolutely amazing Stolen Earth. We will have adventures that take us to the far reaches of time and space, we get this pile of shit. Love and Monsters is an unfortunate episode by being completely and totally irredeemable in any way, shape, form. Mark Warren, who plays Elton Pope, is possibly the only redeeming factor in it by the fact that he's not shit. The monster, the Absorbaloth, is played by, well, Peter Kay, who, for those who are not in the United Kingdom, is a so-called comedian. And you get an episode which, from start to finish, is disjointed, irrelevant, catastrophically bad, self-referential, nightmarish, and a pile of codswallop trash that you shouldn't watch ever. I rate this episode a minus 10.
You gave it minus 10, by the way.
We're going to have words. Me and you, JD, we're going to have words. What do you think?
Bing bong, Future Ponkin here. We did actually receive a listener mini for this episode, and it's a it's a very mini. So I'm gonna go ahead and read it. It comes from Jeff Waddell. Jeff, hi, how are you doing? I believe this is the first time Jeff has sent anything in to us. Thank you very much for listening, Jeff. Jeff writes, Love and Monsters, Absorbaloth. Anal abscess. I was struggling with Dr. Ten before that, or at least with him and the smugness of him and Bingo from the Banana Splits, but this was the final straw. One of the best monsters in New Who, ruined by the Scooby-Doo chase scene. And for what purpose? I'm not even commenting on the absorb a lot of gin before writing this story. Get stuffed. Never, ever darken my memory again, not even for sex with a paving slab. No, especially not for that. Jeff, thank you very much for sending that in. I'm not entirely sure what to make of that mini, to be honest. I do like the absorb a lot of gin before writing this story monster name. I don't get the Bingo from the Banana Splits reference. Sorry, I'm a foreigner. Didn't get that one. Regardless, Jeff, thank you very much for sending that in. Before we go back to the show, though, on the note of sending in mini reviews, in case you haven't heard the disclaimer in the last episode that we dropped, we had some technical issues with the contact form on whobankwhen.com and didn't realize until actually quite a lot of time had passed, we think anyway, that it wasn't forwarding any emails to our whobankwhen email address. We fixed it now, so if you have sent a listener mini in the recent past, please do resubmit it, either by using the contact form on the website, whobackwhen.com, or by sending an email directly to info@whobackwhen.com. Again, thanks, Jeff. Let's get back to the show.
That definitely wraps up this rather long episode of Who Back When, a Doctor Who docpast / podcast. How may one follow us on Twitter? The Rawmeister, who are you on Twitter?
Oh, what the fuck am I on Twitter? Someone must know. You followed me recently, Drew, you know.
Retro Metronome.
That's the fella. Yeah, I'm him.
So follow him.
Or her.
The Druid, the Drewhammer, the Drewmeister is...
I am found that Drew Back When, because it sounds like Who Back When.
That's the true back when I use every single time.
With or without Drew.
Awesome. Yes, he is. Mirimu, are you on Twitter?
I think so. I never use it. Anyway, it should be at Mirimu. I'm not sure. If it's not, don't worry. I don't care about
Don't worry, she doesn't care anyway.
No, I really don't. You're so if you don't want to follow tweeting. Me on Facebook, on Twitter, don't follow me on Twitter, because I don't use Twitter. Thank
Excellent.
You, bye.
Okay. Follow me like yesterday.
Okay.
I am at Ponkin. Here's the soundbite of JD singing how you spell that.
P-O-N-K-E-N, Ponkin.
Thanks, JD.
JD.
And you are?
At Nick O'Leary.
That's like ukulele, but with Nick.
Hi.
Bing bong, and while you're at it, give JD a follow as well. He is at Marius Kane. That is Kane with a K.
Thank you so much for listening. Catch you in the next one. Oh, wait, hang on. The next classic Who is...
The Moon Base.
The next new Who is...
Fear Her?
And the next audio Who is still Wirren Dawn. JD assures me we will record this very soon, and I still hate the shit out of it. Catch you in the next episode. Thanks for listening. Rock on and chud chow.
Bye-bye, everybody. Bye-bye.
Ciao. Good night. Ciao. And good luck.
Kablam!
MMO. Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of who back when. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends? No problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/whobackwhen, all in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus who back when. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account, no lie, so give us a follow. You guessed it, that's @WhoBackWhen, all in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your earballs in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or, still funny, Audio Who Review. Cha-chow.
Who Back When?